Good afternoon, colleagues. Could you please take your seats? Excellencies, Director General, friends and colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us today. My name is Kundavi Kadireshan. I am the FAO Regional Representative and the Assistant Director General for Asia and the Pacific. I am based in Bangkok, and it's also very nice to have you all join us today. As you know, this week we are having a regional side events on zero hunger. So in that sense, today we are going to be focusing on Asia-Pacific region and the work that we have been doing in the Asia-Pacific region. As you know, the FAO's Asia-Pacific region is vast, stretching from Iran in the west, across South Asia, East and Southeast Asia, and out into the Pacific. It's also a very dynamic region, a home to some of the fastest growing economies globally, and yet the region where a majority of the world's undernourished live, nearly half a billion in fact. A bit later, I would be making a very short presentation to give a regional overview as to where the region is in the state of food security and nutrition security, the progress that has been made, and how we plan to move forward. But before that, I would first like to really welcome honorable ministers from Fiji and Nepal who have agreed to speak at the event, who will give us also great insights to the experiences in their countries. But first, it's my pleasure to invite our FAO Director General, Mr. Jose Graciano da Silva, to share with us his reflections on our united and shared global goal of defeating hunger in all forms. Director General, please.
Thank you, Kundavi. I would like, first of all, to welcome all of you, particularly our speakers of today, the Minister of Agriculture, Waterways and Environment of Fiji, and the State Minister for Agriculture and Livestock Development of Nepal. Also recognize the Minister of Samoa attending the meeting, and many representatives. I would like to say, first of all, that Asia has always been the biggest region of FAO, not only in terms of people, land, but also number of people malnourished. And this has been for many different reasons. Asia has countries that make great improvement on the hunger combat, like, for example, China. If you put the numbers of poverty and hunger, if you put China in, will be attendance. If you take China out, it will be another tendency. When you put China in, hunger and extreme poverty goes down. Take China, hunger and extreme poverty goes up. But unfortunately, this great accomplishment was not followed for all big countries in Asia. We still have a lot of people who hunger in India, for example. Southeast Asia in general is pushing down the progress made on hunger and poverty. Different from other regions, most important element there is the impact of climate change. I think there is no doubt nowadays to say Asia, and particularly small island countries, the Pacific Island, a huge effect by impacts of climate change. Prolonged drought, typhoons, floodings are reversing most of the progress we achieved in the past. And water scarcity is becoming one of the greatest problems in a region that used to be a lot of water available. scarcity of land was a traditional issue, but not water. And now are both water and land. I have to say also that, unfortunately, some conflict areas have emerged in Asia in the last years. And this is even contributing to have more people unnourished or malnourished. One of the typical issues was the migration process of the Rohingyas that provoke a lot of disturbance in all the regions. But conflicts in Philippines, Indonesia, and other countries in the Pacific are also growing and bringing back the issue of hunger in those regions. I would like to say that in a few days more, exactly on the 15th of July, we'll be presenting the new figures of hunger in the world. Our SOFI publication in New York during the high-level political forum. The number shows that there is also a small increase in hunger numbers, but most relevant is the growth on obesity. More and more we are seeing that nowadays it's not hunger alone the biggest problem to face. The extremity, hunger and obesity are a reality in most of the continents. And this applies also to Asia. Despite some country has very low level of obesity like Japan due to the healthy diet they have, other countries are growing in the incidence of obesity. And I remember visiting Samoa in the past with my good friend Ripati, the former Minister of Agriculture. He told me, joking, that we are very concerned about the sea level raising, but sometimes I don't know if you are sinking, not also due to the weight of the people that live on the island. And basically this is because they are importing almost all the food they use, or big part of the food that they eat. And when you import cheap food, and not always cheap food is nutritious food or healthy food. But it's less expensive. So at the end, you give up eating taro, other roots, fruits and vegetables available on the island, to eat the chips and all those artificial food imported. And that is the base for growing rates of obesity in the Pacific Island. All these issues about hunger. On one side, on the other side, hunger and obesity are parts of the same coin, faces of the same coin, malnutrition. And that's what we are talking about here today. So I would like to again express my deeply appreciation for the Minister of Fiji and the Minister of Nepal for coming, and to Kundavi to organize this meeting. Kundavi, please.
Thank you very much, DG. I also want to take this opportunity. Your dedication and leadership in the Zero Hunger campaign has actually been an inspiration to all of us. Your initiative to appoint a Zero Hunger ambassador for every region also has helped raise awareness and also how the ways to tackle hunger and improve nutrition. In Asia-Pacific region, as you know, our special goodwill ambassador is Her Royal Highness Princess Maha Chakri Sirindorn of Thailand. She has worked tirelessly for many years in the region, not just in Thailand alone, but many countries in the region. She has initiated many agriculture projects with an emphasis on boosting nutrition for children and young people, all with the purpose of nutrition improvement and also alleviating poverty. Her Royal Highness wanted to join us here today, but unfortunately her busy schedule meant she had other commitments and she couldn't do it. However, she has expressed her deep appreciation to the Director General for the endorsement of her role as Asia-Pacific Zero Hunger Ambassador, and her high level of visibility, work and advocacy has undoubtedly helped our region on the road to zero hunger. Our Excellencies, DG, friends and colleagues, as I mentioned earlier, the region is pretty vast, and it is also one of the regions where undernourished people the highest globally as well. And because the region is so vast, you can understand that the approaches to achieving zero hunger and improved nutrition will also vary country to country, and even within a country, very differently as well. So in that sense, I'd like to first take this opportunity to give you an overview of where the region stands and what our countries are doing and where we plan to go forward. Let me actually step out there and make a brief presentation. Opportunity to bring us up to date where the region is and then give some examples what our countries are doing to tackle zero hunger and where do we want to go from here. Now, this graph, as you see, it has been quite impressive. If you look at the last 10-15 years trend, we have been really able to bring down undernourishment and also bring down the hunger in the region. But when you see after 2015, this progress, it has actually stalled. It's not going up, it's not coming down, but it is kind of staying steady, but not really going down. So that's something that we observe region-wide in the last few years. Now, at the same time, if you look at the problem, both looking at from the rural as well as urban, this is a problem. Undernourishment is a problem in both the urban and rural setting. And it is also something, a phenomena that we see in Asia-Pacific. The DG mentioned about obesity. In all sub-regions in the region, you can see that obesity is increasing. And particularly the Pacific is pretty high and it continues to increase, which is quite concerning. And when we look at the numbers with respect to rural-urban, obesity is especially a problem in urban areas. And you could see that Pakistan, where it stands, between rural and urban, the blue bar you see, you can see more than 23% are in rural, in urban areas. So something to be really concerned about. Now, we also look at the numbers relating to micronutrient deficiency. When we talk about malnutrition, we talk about undernourishment, micronutrient deficiency, and obesity issues. So here, micronutrient deficiency, it is indeed a larger problem. When you look at anemia, its prevalence among women of the reproductive age is pretty high, particularly in South Asia, and also with respect to vitamin A deficiency. So in all these areas, much work needs to be done. Now, as much as what we saw is a bit concerning, it's not all gloom and doom. Countries understand there's a lot more work to be done, and there's a lot going on at the country level. And what we have highlighted here is some of the big things that countries are doing and where FAO is also closely engaged with. The important thing is at least four countries in the Asia-Pacific region. What I'm pleased is to have the Nepal minister talk about the right to food enshrined in national constitution. You also see that in India. You also see that in Nepal and Bangladesh. So countries are looking at this as a rights issue. Some countries have gone beyond developing plans and strategy, but also good investment plans, where Ministry of Agriculture to Health and all ministries that are involved in the nutrition agenda are also having funds to back their work. And here I particularly want to mention Bangladesh. It's one of the countries where FAO has been working more than 10 years, starting from the policies, legislation, strategy, and now we are in the phase of investment plan and the implementation of it. And climate being a big issue in our region, we see that resilience building is also being increasingly recognized and being adopted by our own countries. In Philippines, as well as in the Mekong countries, building resilience as part of agriculture strategy and policy is becoming a big new move. And this is something we feel is also going to help in the food security and the nutrition security agenda. When we talk about food security, nutrition security, we always talk about the problems of coordination. And here again, I am very pleased to have the Fiji minister who hopefully will give us a little bit more insight into the multi-sectoral coordination. What are the problems? How do they go about it? But here again, we have some good examples where countries are making an effort and something that we can learn and share from one another. I already mentioned about the National Action Plan for Zero Hunger. Countries have either got them as their national agenda, as a policy or a strategy or an action plan. We have at least 8 countries in the region which are moving much more at a national level. Now, when we talk about building nutrition, it is not just about food production strategies alone. We are also looking at taking a much more food systems approach. And more recently, Indonesia has asked us to really work with us across the range, not just focusing on the production and the productivity, but all across the value chain. And that's something that we would also see that countries have embraced the concept of food systems, but want to know, how do you operationalize it? So that's an increasing area of work for FAO. Now, one aspect that the regional office has been spending a lot was in terms of bringing some focus on the importance of neglected and underutilized species. When I say that, it's talking about millets, sorghum, pulses, yam. You know, we have a special work going on to identify crops and vegetables that have been neglected but can be brought forth from an environmental, from a nutrition, from a livelihood standpoint. So this is getting increasing acceptance, and we call that the future smart food. It's an area that the regional office has been working on. Next slide, I think I just wanted to give an overview of what are the 4 areas the regions work in this area. It's either policy, legal, institutional support, data and statistics, as we heard yesterday in one of the big gathering where the importance of data and statistics was brought about. Then, of course, all the work in terms of innovation, testing out new approaches is one big part of our work. But when we talk about Asia-Pacific region, emergency support certainly becomes a big part of it. And this picture actually tells you all. 2018 alone, from Afghanistan to Laos floods, the Myanmar floods, in DPRK, the drought, India, where we had the major 1 in 100 years floods, the fall armyworm and the African swine fever, along with the Philippines, the typhoon and the tsunami. These are the disasters and emergencies that we are faced with. So this is becoming also an increasing part of our emergency response to ensure food security and nutrition security. I just also wanted to highlight some of the partnership part of it. And this is some very deeper work that we are doing. Not with the regional bodies, we have established a lot of regional framework agreements to move our agenda. With the World Bank and some of the UN systems, we have expanded our work in the urban food systems. Similarly, with respect to our regional SOFI, this is the State of Food and Insecurity in the region, for the first time we have started to do that jointly with the WHO, WFP and UNICEF. So hereafter it is going to be a joint product, and that has also gotten a more deeper understanding of the drivers of food security and nutrition security. I just wanted to end with a couple of slides in terms of where do we go from here. To go from here, we need to recognize what are the deeper problems that we are faced with. And here, the climate aspect of it, I want to emphasize. The resource depletion, particularly land degradation and water shortages in Asia-Pacific, South Asia particularly, and the migration and urbanization agenda, and more than anything else, the growing inequality. All of these are impacting upon the most vulnerable groups, and that's something worrying for us. So when we recognize what the serious issues are, what the region has been doing in the last few months is to try to find out how do we try and move our agenda in addressing some of these issues beyond the talk. And I think towards that, I'm very pleased that we had a major event with IFPRI and FAO joining hands to identify what are those accelerators to help end hunger. And we have identified several areas which you already see there. And this is something that we would like to really emphasize and work with our member countries to advance the move forward to end hunger. Similarly, the food systems approach is getting greater acceptance. To make it much more practical, what it really means and what countries need to do is also an area that we would be really expanding. And more than anything else, it's partnership. It, we all recognize this cannot be done just by countries alone and not FAO and countries, but all of us, citizens, private sector, NGOs, all joining together. So in that sense, the importance of this partnership is something that we have emphasized in anything and everything we do. So that's a quick overview. I'm looking at the time and I'm looking at the flashcards as well. It's just an overview of the situation of the region, but not a comprehensive one, as it could be. Given the limited time, we don't want to be presenting this is all the story of Asia-Pacific. But I think you will be hearing from the two ministers much more concrete country-specific stories, and it is a pleasure for me now to turn to the two key speakers from Fiji and Nepal. First, I'd like to ask the Honourable Minister from Fiji, Dr. Mahendra Reddy, Minister of Agriculture, Waterways and Environment, to share with us his experiences and thought. Your Excellency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director General, Mr. Joseph De Silva, Madam Minister for Nepal, Honourable Ministers from the region, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, Bulavinaka to you from Fiji. Ladies and gentlemen, Fiji appear to be food secure in terms of food availability. However, yet in the past decade, the country has not been able to produce enough food locally and therefore ended up importing more than half the food needed to meet the local consumption demand. In 2010, just 31% of the total food available was sourced domestically. And this is especially noted for root crops, where more energy or calories is derived from imported cereals compared to local staples such as cassava and dalo. Consumption of roots and tubers have been falling during the last 3 to 4 decades, mainly because of urban population, rise in the urban population, which tends to find that it's cheaper to buy imported cereal products, which are also easier to store and last longer, convenient, easily available, easy to cook. Amongst the reason for this decline in food production locally is that most producers are small-scale farmers, family farmers working individually, and the production to meet the local needs lack coordination. Children who used to be involved in farming activities before are now going and taking advantage of free education, going through the university system or technical colleges, and I don't see agriculture as a profession which gives them a stable source of income in the future. Other challenges faced by farmers include poor access to market. This is something that we are now looking at how we get market to provide signals for farmers to respond to production and supply. So basically saying that, demand should create supply rather than supply creating demand. So we're looking at organizing the markets and how we could get send these market signals to the farmers and therefore get them to respond to production. But the issue is, whom are we providing these market signals to? When we get the exporters, buyers to go and provide signal to the growers, to farmers, the question is, who are these farmers? Are they full-time commercial farmers or are they part-time, pastime, leisure farmers? Now, if they are part-time, pastime, leisure or hobby farmers, then these signals does not matter to them. They will not respond to these signals. So that is a dilemma that we are facing now. As a minister who took this portfolio recently, I'm saying that the long-term sustainability of our agriculture system is to let market signals drive demand and push production and supply. But the problem that we are now facing is that we get these exporters, the buyers, to go and pick up the produce from the farm gate and give them the signal saying that we will pick up your produce. You produce, don't worry about the market. But they will only respond if they are full-time farmers, commercially oriented farmers. But we are stuck with a large number of aging farmers, hobby farmers, leisure farmers, who are not responding to market signal. So that is something that we now, probably during question session, I will explain how I'm dealing with this scenario of farmers responding to market signals, because that is the sustainable way to go in terms of boosting agriculture production and local production, is to give the farmers the signals. Food stability is threatened by seasonality of foods, fruits and vegetables throughout the year. So that is, again, I'm going to talk about later on. How are we dealing with this issue of seasonality, which is impacting nutritional security more than food security? As alluded to by Assistant Director General, that obesity is and overweight is a problem in the region. We are facing a major problem in the Pacific as well. In Fiji, 4.8% of children under 5 years are obese, 7.2% between 5 to 14 years are obese, 8.1% between 15 to 17 years are obese, and above 17 years, 63% are obese. So that's an alarming stats. Above 17 years of age, 63% are obese. Now, again, taking these statistics, we are trying to respond and see how we can deal with this. Now, when you have a school system, the primary school system, the high school system, where 13 years we keep these children in our school system, and every day in our school canteen we serve them with foods loaded with oil, salt, then this 18 years, again, we're changing the whole dimension of the body. That is the genesis, that's the origin of these children becoming obese. So we have to now develop responses to deal with what do we do in our school system, in the canteens. What do we sell? Of course, these canteen owners are fighting back, saying that no, I mean, we have paid this fees here to rent this place. We want to sell what we think would best give us the maximum profit. How do you respond to that? So that is something, when I was education minister, I developed a response, so we'll probably talk in the question and answer session. The issue of how do we deal with the urban dwellers. We find that children in the rural and outer islands, this is not that much of a problem, obesity. The problem is more on the urban area, where the parents find it easier to buy packaged food, processed food, and therefore supported by the canteens in the school, which is causing major problems of obesity and overweight amongst the children in the urban area. So if you break down this obesity into the rural maritime area vis-a-vis the urban area, you'll find that majority of these stats of obesity comes from urban area, squatter settlements that are prevalent in the urban area. Resulting from this, we've got NCDs associated with high prevalence of obesity, causing being one of the major causes of death in Fiji. 80% of the deaths in Fiji are as a result of NCDs. Cardiovascular disease are a leading cause of death. The amputation as a result of diabetics is a growing issue, given that our tertiary healthcare facilities is not so well developed. Easy way out is to amputate, and then that creates another dimension of health expenditure in Fiji. Then, as Assistant Director General mentioned, that we are now in the brunt of facing the impact of climate change. Cyclones, floods, droughts, storm surges are increasingly found in the Pacific region. Cyclones and droughts and floods, the natural disasters, have a multi-prone impact on food security and nutritional security. It not only damages the stock of agricultural product that we have, it diverts government expenditure towards rehabilitation, it damages the infrastructure and again diverts expenditure which would have gone towards building our stock of agricultural capital towards building of infrastructure. Again, also it has also impact on moving communities from low-lying area susceptible to saltwater intrusion, and therefore creates a new dimension that the new challenge of the Pacific Island communities. We are trying to develop strategies to build resilience among the communities, and we need to move out of developing programs, back of the envelope programs, and graduate into developing an implementation of actionable programs on the ground. Now, I do understand the importance of the back of the envelope programs that we see, the list provided by the Assistant Director General just a while ago. All this I term as the back of the envelope programs. The advantage of these programs is it'll ensure sustainability of the actionable programs on the ground. I do understand the importance of that. But I think we need to balance, have a fair balance in terms of the amount of money that they devote in terms of for the back of the envelope programs vis-a-vis the actual actionable programs on the ground to build sustainability with respect to food security and nutritional security. Now, I will leave it here at the moment. I would probably respond to questions in terms of what are some of the actual actionable programs that we are now taking ownership of. We have for long dependent on international agencies, etc., but I think we now want to take ownership of these programs ourselves, and we're diverting a reasonable amount of money towards putting these actionable programs on the ground. I'm going to talk about that later on, maybe after the other speaker.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minister, for those observations. I will come back to you in another round, but I would want you to think a little bit about the sector ministries joining together, because what I found extremely interesting in Fiji was the health ministers, the agriculture ministers, education ministers all coming together and having a very joint action plan. How did you go about it? Was it difficult? So before, let me go to the minister from Nepal and come back to you. Minister from Nepal, can I invite you to share your thoughts on your experiences in Nepal?
Shunya Bhokmari, Chunuti ko lagi Nepal ko paryasra uplabdiharu. Upasthit sabai mahanubhavharu ka lagi, hardik namaskar tatha abhivadan, karyakram ka sanchalika tatha FAO ka sahayak mahanirdeshak Kundabhi Kadiri Dasen, chhalpal ka वक्ता महामहिम एफओ का महानिर्देशक जोसे ग्राजी आडो डाक्टर सिल्भा महामहिम कृषि जल तथा वातावरण मन्त्री फिजेका महेन्द्र रेड्डी ज्यू उपस्थित महिला तथा सज्जन वृन्द आज शून्य भोकमरीको अभियानमा नेपालको प्रतिबद्धता र प्रयासहरूको बारेमा केही कुरा राख्न पाउँदा मलाई खुसी लागेको छ विज्ञानले आज सबै क्षेत्रमा परिवर्तन ल्याएको छ जीवन हिजो भन्दा धेरै सरल भएको छ तर आज पनि धेरै देशहरू र नागरिकहरू विज्ञानले गरेको प्रगतिको उपभोग गर्न पाइरहेका छैनन् कृषि क्षेत्रको विकास गर्ने हो भने सुधारिएको बिउ र उन्नत प्रविधिले उत्पादन र उत्पादकता वृद्धि गर्न सहयोग पुगेको छ जसले खाद्यान्नको उपलब्धता बढाएको छ तर खास गरी साना किसान र विकट भूगोलमा बस्ने र स्रोतमा न्यून पहुँच भएका किसानहरू अझै पनि यसबाट अपेक्षित प्रतिफल पाउन सकेका छैनन् तसर्थ विकासका लागि विकासको कुरा गरिरहँदा लक्षित समुदायमा कसरी प्रत्यक्ष लाभ पुर्याउन सकिन्छ भन्ने विचार गरेर अघि बढ्नुपर्ने हुन्छ आज विश्व समुदाय सामु दुईवटा चुनौतीहरू छन् पहिलो हो पर्याप्त खाद्य उत्पादन र अर्को हो गरिबी निवारण यदि यी दुई कुराको दिगो विकास खोज्न सक्ने हो भने अन्य कुराहरूको सजिलै समाधान गर्न सकिन्छ विश्व समुदायले रियो प्लस 20 सम्मेलनबाट अघि बढाएको दिगो विकासका लक्ष्यहरू 2030 मार्फत लिएको भोकमरीको अन्त्यका लक्ष्यमा नेपालले पनि आफ्नो प्रतिबद्धता जनाएको छ। सन् 2014 डिसेम्बर 19 दिन तत्कालीन सहरी विकास मन्त्रीबाट संयुक्त राष्ट्र सङ्घका उपमहासचिव साथै अन्य विशिष्ट पाहुनाहरूको उपस्थितिमा सन् 2025सम्ममा नेपालबाट भोकमरीको अन्त गर्ने घोषणा गर्नुभएको थियो। नेपालले आफ्नो संविधानमा नै खाद्य अधिकारलाई मौलिक हकको रूपमा राखेको छ र यसरी संविधान प्रदत्त अधिकारको कार्यान्वयनको लागि खाद्य अधिकार तथा खाद्य सम्प्रभुता सम्बन्धी ऐन 2075 जारी गरेको छ र अन्य खाद्य अधिकारका सम्बन्धी ऐन नियमहरूको पनि समसामयिक संशोधन गरेको छ। शून्य भोकमरीको अभियानलाई कार्यान्वयन गर्न नेपाल सरकारले प्रधानमन्त्री केपी शर्मा ओली ज्यू तथा एफओका महानिर्देशक जोसा ग्राजी आना डाक्टर सिल्भा जो हामीसँगै प्लानमा हुनुहुन्छ को आतिथ्यमा सन् 2016 मार्च 13 दिन शून्य भोकमरी अभियानको 10 वर्षे सन् 2016 2025 कार्ययोजना समेत जारी गरेको छ। खाद्य सुरक्षा र भोकमरीको अन्त्य एउटा क्षेत्रको मात्रै प्रयासले सम्भव छैन, तसर्थ राष्ट्रिय योजना आयोगले सबै सरकारवालाहरूको सहकार्यमा बहुपक्षीय पोषण आयोजना कार्यान्वयनको प्रथम चरण 2013-2017 सम्पन्न गरेको छ भने दोस्रो चरण 2018-2023 कार्यान्वयनको क्रममा रहेको छ। कृषि क्षेत्रको कार्यक्रम सञ्चालन गर्दा पोषण संवेदनशील कृषिको अवधारणा राखेर कार्यक्रम तर्जुमा तथा सञ्चालन गर्ने गरिएको छ। कृषि तथा खाद्य सुरक्षा आयोजना र सुआहारा कार्यक्रम यसको प्रतिफल उदाहरण हुन्। नेपाल सरकारले कृषि क्षेत्रको समग्र विकासका लागि तयार गरेको कृषि विकास रणनीति 2015-2035 पनि खाद्य तथा पोषण सुरक्षालाई एउटा फ्ल्यागसिप कार्यक्रमको रूपमा राखेको छ। यस्तै गरी 2016-2026 कार्यान्वयनमा रहेको प्रधानमन्त्री कृषि आधुनिकीकरण परियोजनाले कृषिलाई यान्त्रिकीकरण, व्यवसायीकरण, औद्योगिकरण गर्ने सोचका साथ कार्यान्वयनमा छ। नेपालको 2015 आवधिक योजना सन् 2019-2024 र आर्थिक वर्ष 2076-77 नीति तथा कार्यक्रममा पनि कृषि उत्पादन र उत्पादकता बढाउने र कृषि र मुख्य कृषि तथा पशुजन्य वस्तुहरूमा आत्मनिर्भर हुने कार्यक्रमहरू प्रस्ताव गरिएको छ। वर्तमान परिप्रेक्ष्यमा नेपाल सामु दुईवटा मुख्य चुनौती छन्। प्रथम हो कृषिलाई आधुनिकीकरण तथा व्यवसायीकरण गर्नु र दोस्रो हो साना तथा सीमान्त कृषकहरूको आय स्तर वृद्धि गर्नु। तसर्थ यी दुई तथ्यलाई मध्यनजर गर्दै कृषि विकासमा सहकारीलाई एउटा माध्यमको रूपमा लिँदै सहकारी निजी तथा सहकारी तीन खम्बे रणनीतिलाई कृषि क्षेत्रमा पनि लागू गरेको छ र तिनै पक्षको सहकार्यमा कृषि विकासलाई गति दिने प्रयासको थालनी गरेको छ। खाद्य सुरक्षा एउटा बहुपक्षीय विषय हो। खाद्य उत्पादनमा कमी भएर मात्र होइन, उत्पादित खाद्य वस्तुहरूको संरक्षण गर्न नसकेका कारण पनि खाद्य असुरक्षा बढेको पाइन्छ। बाली उत्पादन पश्चात भण्डारणको अभावमा कृषकहरू सस्तो मूल्यमा नै आफ्नो उत्पादन बिक्री गर्न बाध्य हुन्छन् भने पछि सोही वस्तु महँगो मूल्यमा किन्न बाध्य हुन्छन्। यस्तै गरी ग्रेडिङ, प्याकेजिङ र ढुवानीमा सावधानी अपनाउन नसक्दा कृषकले उत्पादन गरेको वस्तु उपभोक्तासम्म पुग्दा ठुलो अंश नोक्सान भएर गएको पाइन्छ। तसर्थ यस्तो उत्पादन अप्रान्त क्षति न्यूनीकरणको लागि पनि नेपाल सरकारले आफ्नै नियमित कार्यक्रम मार्फत र दात्री निकायको सहकार्यमा सञ्चालित आयोजनाहरू मार्फत उत्पादन उपरान्त क्षति न्यूनीकरण गर्ने कार्यका साथै खाद्य पदार्थको न्यून नोक्सान सम्बन्धी सचेतनामूलक कार्यक्रमहरू पनि सञ्चालन गर्दै आएको छ। नेपालमा 8.1% जनता कुपोषित भएको अनुमान छ भने 1/4 जनता गरिबीको रेखामुनि रहेका छन्। सन् 2001 पुटकोपन भएका 5 वर्ष मुनिका बालबालिका 57% भएकोमा र सन् 2017 37.1% झरेको छ। नेपालले विगतमा पोषणको क्षेत्रमा गरेको उपलब्धि उल्लेखनीय छ, तर दिगो विकासको लक्ष्य प्राप्ति र शून्य भोकमरीको चुनौतीलाई सामना गर्न अझै धेरै काम गर्नुपर्ने हुन्छ। परम्परागत खाद्य वस्तुहरूको उपभोगमा कमी आएको कारण पनि खाद्य र पोषणमा चुनौती थपिएको छ। तसर्थ खाद्य बालीहरूको उत्पादकता र उत्पादन वृद्धि गर्न उन्नत बालीहरूको जात र उन्नत प्रविधिमा जोड दिनको साथै ग्रामीण क्षेत्रमा खाद्य तथा पोषण सुरक्षाका लागि रैथाने बालीको संरक्षण तथा उपयोग र उत्पादन विविधीकरणमा पनि जोड दिएको छ। वैदेशिक रोजगारमा युवाको बढ्दो आकर्षण र युवाको विदेश पलायनको कारण नेपालको कृषि महिलामा आधारित भएको छ। तसर्थ महिलाको कार्यबोझ कम गर्न कृषि क्षेत्रमा ससाना ट्रेक्टर तथा ट्रेक्टर जडित उपकरणको प्रयोग र महिला मैत्री कृषि प्रविधि विकासलाई पनि जोड दिएको छ। सानो देश भए पनि नेपालमा सबै बालीको लागि उपयुक्त हावापानी पाइन्छ। तसर्थ यो विशिष्टताको उपयोग गर्दै आन्तरिक उपयोगको लागि मात्र नभई निर्यातमूलक बालीहरूको पनि नेपालमा प्रशस्त सम्भावनाहरू छन्। तसर्थ नेपाल जस्तो विशेष भूगोल र हावापानीको उपयोग गर्दै यस्ता सम्भावनायुक्त बालीहरूको निर्यात व्यापार प्रबन्धनलाई पनि नेपालले प्राथमिकतामा राखेको छ। हालैमा जलवायु परिवर्तनका कारण नेपालको हिमालमा प्रतिकूल अभाव परिरहेको छ। यसले एकातिर पानीको मुहान सुकेर पिउने पानी तथा खेतीपातीको लागि सिँचाइको समस्या निम्त्याएको छ भने अर्कोतर्फ अधिक वर्षाको कारण बाढी पैह्रोले खेतीयोग्य भूमि तथा जनधनको क्षति हुने क्रम पनि बढ्दै गएको छ। तसर्थ विश्वव्यापी रूपमा प्रभाव पार्ने जलवायु परिवर्तनको प्रभावलाई न्यूनीकरण गर्ने कार्यमा नेपाल समग्र विश्वसँग हातेमालो र सहकार्यको लागि अनुरोध गर्न चाहन्छ। एफियो नेपालले आफ्नो विश्वव्यापी समर्थक र विज्ञताको उपयोग गर्दै खाद्य तथा पोषण सुरक्षाको लागि नेपालको कृषि विकासमा उल्लेखनीय सहयोग पुर्याएको छ। कृषि बालीहरूको उत्पादन र उत्पादक वृद्धिको साथै वातावरणको प्रभाव न्यूनीकरण खाद्य स्वच्छताको साथै कृषिजन्य उत्पादनको निर्यात प्रबन्धनको लागि आवश्यक नीति तर्जुमा तथा क्षमता विकासको लागि प्राविधिक सहयोग परियोजना र अन्य कार्यक्रममा एफएओले पुर्याएको योगदान उल्लेखनीय छ। विश्वबाट भोकमरीको अन्त्य एक चुनौतीपूर्ण र जरुरी काम हो। यसको लागि विश्व समुदायका साझा बुझाइ र साझा प्रयास आवश्यक छ। विश्वबाट भोकमरीको अन्त्यको अभियानको सफलताको लागि ज्ञान स्रोत र प्रविधिको साझेदारीको साथै सहकार्यको लागि एफएओलाई एउटा साझा चौतारीको रूपमा उपयोग गर्नु आवश्यक छ। धन्यवाद।
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, for your remarks. I'm just looking at the time, so probably we have 15 minutes to close this event. So let me go to the audience to have some questions for the honorable ministers. Minister from Fiji, you can answer my question, but let's hear from the audience and then you can also respond to that. Let me invite the audience. Any questions? For either Fiji or Nepal, or broad questions. Let me ask the Minister of Fiji, perhaps talk about the multi-ministry, sector ministries coordination, how it works, Minister.
Madam Chair, thank you for asking that question. Initially, ministers or ministries, they become a bit cagey in terms of, you know, taking ownership and not wanting to work, on cross-cutting issues. Now, agriculture ministry is one ministry that assists in also with respect to the health ministry's work. So we have decided that, you know, to form a subcommittee of the cabinet where ministers with cross-cutting issues which will meet and develop programs and ensure that we don't duplicate, as well as we ensure that we work together and we get our executive team to work together. Now, ministers may agree, but we need to see through what's happening with the executive level. We have got a food and nutritional council in Fiji, which looks at the nutritional side. We've got together and developed these programs on nutritional security. To deal with the issue of seasonal availability of fruits, we are developing now from beginning of this year, establishing orchards, fruit tree orchards, so that we are able to push in locally available fruits into the market. The moment large amount of fruits, majority are being imported, and also we've got a large tourism sector where if you go to visit a hotel, you'll see most of the fruits that they're using. These are imported from Australia and New Zealand in particular. So we are now developing or establishing orchards, incentivizing farmers, where we are providing at our cost seedlings to establish orchards. This is in two phases. In the first phase, we're looking at 8 kinds of fruit trees: avocado, breadfruit, guava, mango, a few others. So there's 8. In the second one, we're looking at other tropical, let's say rambutan, a few others. So these are at the moment not at all available in Fiji. So first phase, we're looking at establishing 40 orchard farms in 1 year. At the moment, if you ask me, we have established about 25 orchards within the first 6 months using funds from different line items with the environment. We have introduced to deal with urban nutrition security. We have introduced backyard gardening program where we've got a package out. We give out to the urban households a package which consists of potting bags, garden soil, seedlings of vegetables and fruits, a backyard gardening profile, which we want to profile the household before and after. We monitor what has happened from our package that we hand over, and flyer which explained to them how they will do backyard gardening. We just announced in the budget, which was approved last week, a new school gardening project we want to activate. It was there, then got died out. So revive school gardening projects. We are now going, the scenario in Fiji and the Pacific is slightly different. We got a large amount of population in rural interior settlements and villages. So we have established a new program called Rural Village Fruit Micro Orchard program. So every village will go and work with the villages to plant these fruit trees in the village, not on the farms, in the village, around the houses, so that these fruits are available for the village, the communal groups, for consumption. So that will deal with the nutritional security aspect in these rural outer communities. We're looking at nature-based solutions to address problems caused by nature, natural disasters. For example, riverbank erosion, which has an impact on losing arable land and also threatening communities and our infrastructure. We are using vetiver grass to protect riverbanks. We are planting mangroves along coastal areas to protect the coastal erosion. We are also looking at inland conservation, land conservation techniques to ensure that, you know, we don't have or don't accelerate topsoil erosion, which is becoming a major issue. Some 2-4 decades ago, we did not have that kinds of activities on the upper catchments, logging activities and agriculture activity, which is now increased in volume, resulting in a lot of topsoils being eroded off to the waterways, coming downstream, clogging up the waterways, siltation of waterways, and therefore causing problems to infrastructure and communities living around the waterways. So we are dealing with that, developing conduct how people should conduct, how operators should conduct when they're working in catchments upstream. And a lot of problems in downstream is caused by the conduct in upstream. We are revamping our research station to provide high-yielding varieties to farmers. We are only providing it to farmers who are commercially oriented. You know, we have made it very clear. For so long, we have poured in money with subsistence farmers, and government money without really giving that leverage to commercial agriculture. So we said that if you're a part-time farmer, a leisure farmer, a pastime farmer, a hobby farmer, you can remain there. You don't bother us, we won't bother you. But we are now taking the public sector money to look at commercial agriculture. Three components: grow for market, create surplus. Part of the surplus you will reinvest to develop so that we then move to the next set of farmers. So government money will go towards commercial agriculture, supported by research that we will provide them with a new high-yielding variety. We'll continue with seed purification program. We'll continue with programs to develop varieties which are high-yielding, not only high-yielding, but pest and disease resistance. We are we have our own marketing authority. We've got food processing units. So we are now taking this to give signal to the farmers that you grow, sign contracts with us, with the buyer, we'll pick up all your produce. So market is not an issue. In small developing countries, market is a major issue which discourages farmers from producing crops, particularly which are perishable in nature. So we have resolved that, and so we are now going big time into providing this signal. And we're also constructing cold storage facilities throughout. So these are some of the... I will come back again when I give time to my other colleague.
Thank you very much, Excellency. Let me ask the Minister from Nepal. Probably you can give us some sense of this right to food. What were the elements that made it happen? And how is it helping you in advancing the hunger and nutrition agenda? So I'd like to hear from you again very briefly, because I'm looking at the time and we've got to end it in the next 5 minutes. Please go ahead. Yes, you can.
सर्वप्रथम त क्वेशनको लागि धन्यवाद अहिले हामीले अघि पनि मैले मन्तव्यमा राख्दाखेरि खाद्य अधिकारको लागि कानूनमै हामीले व्यवस्था गरेका छौँ र त्यसको लागि हाम्रो मन्त्रालयको तर्फबाट एन पनि बनाइसकेका छौँ र यसका चाहिँ विभिन्न पार्टहरू छ खाद्य अधिकारलाई चाहिँ नोक्सान हुने गरी असर हुने गरी कानूनको यदि उल्लङ्घन कसैले गर्छ भने त्यसका चरणबद्ध हामीले सजायहरू राखेका छौँ जरिवाना पनि राखेका छौँ र प्रकृति हेरीको सजायहरू पनि राखेका छौँ त्यसमा जेल सजाय पनि हामीले राखेका छौँ भन्नुहोस्
May I explain in English? Thank you, Assistant Director General Kajalasan. Regarding the food right of the citizen, Nepal government has promulgated the Food Right and Food Sovereignty Act 2018. Under the Food Right and Food Sovereignty Act, especially the right of the smallholder farmer has been assured. They are given the right for use of the traditional varieties and traditional technologies, which was developed by experience and practice for long. And the other thing regarding the food security, the government has assured the central government and the provincial government are mandated to keep the food reserve in situation of crisis. So the other point to mention is that in the market, starting from the production to the end consumers, it is the food market is a long chain. So in the chain, the stakeholders who play major role, the traders, has to follow a particular practice. They cannot hide the stuck with them. And it has happened that in time of crisis, sometimes the traders, food traders, they hide the stuck with them and sell in a higher price. So in the food Right and Food Sovereignty Act, it has been clearly mentioned that if they are found guilty for keep hiding the food balance in time of crisis, there is a provision for punishment of financial as well as the prison provision is also there. So in such a way, the government has assured the right of the small scale holders, farmers, and the other hand, on the other hand, the not only the protecting the small holder farmer, but to increase the production and productivity, the commercial production has also been promoted by different activity and programs. So in this way, that increasing the production and productivity through commercial production as well as protecting the small scale holders, farmers, has been assured in the Food Right and Food Sovereignty Act 2018. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, so we'll have to close now. And I really want to take this opportunity to thank both the ministers for sharing your experiences, observations, and also what governments in your countries are doing. Although we have run out of time now, we still have time for our 2030 agenda. We hope we can all put our heads together and really make a difference. And as the Director General was saying, we need to get up the political will, the investment, the coordination, all to work so that we really end hunger by 2030. So with that, we must really accelerate what we are doing, because our children and their children are all depending on us. And I really appreciate you all for participating in this event, and also for our panel to share their thoughts in this very interesting debate. With that, I thank you all. I suppose there's some light refreshment, more than that. So please join us for the light lunch, and the ministers will be there. So what you couldn't ask us, you can ask them. You can still continue the conversation. With that, thank you all.